lovely listeners, and thank you for tuning in for another episode of Tell Me More Political Podcast. Today, I have a few domestic topics and then an international topic for you. Firstly, the educational results that we just heard from international testing, how Australian students are continuing to slide in performance and what can be done about it. I'm also going to talk about the government's success in repealing the Medivac legislation today with the help of Senator Lambie. And finally, a quick update on the UK election and who we can expect to win. Now I'm going to talk about Australia's performance in education. So most recently, PISA, which is an international organisation, it stands for Program for International Student Assessment. They assess countries on their children's or 15-year-olds' educational performance every 3 years. The most recent results are shocking. There's been a clear downward trend and it's caused a lot of concern and thought for where to go next from here. Australian students have performed at record lows since the testing began. Results have dropped both in absolute terms and also in relation to other countries. There's also been a higher number of low-performing students in that bracket and less students in the high-performer bracket. Every 3 years when we've had the results, Australia has been slipping further and further behind. And at this point, the average student in reading, the 15-year-old Australian student, is 1.3 years behind the same age student in Singapore. Now, Singapore and China are topping pretty much across the board of subjects. The tests also showed that one in five Australian 15-year-olds cannot show more than the minimal level of skills expected of them. Now, all of these paint a pretty shocking picture for everyone involved in education, which is everyone in Australia, children, parents, teachers. We're at the level where kids doing maths in this year are a year behind kids at the same age doing maths in 2003. So we come to the stage where everyone's trying to apportion blame and come up with quick solutions, but as the drop in results has been continuous over years, every 3 years, every time the PISA evaluation comes out, Australia's slipping further and further behind. And this is alongside a backdrop of over the last 10 years, there's been a $20 billion funding increase across Australia. That's not a million, that's $1 billion. So it's not like education has been completely forgotten. There's clearly resources there, and there'd be more resources available most likely if a foolproof or a good plan to reform the curriculum was presented. But stakeholders need to come up with a good way to present it and provide evidence-based reform that the government and governments will implement. Now, that in itself is another issue. The federal government doesn't own a single school. Schools are controlled by state governments. And so for people to ask the federal government to invest in schooling and try to coordinate a national curriculum and make sure that standards are uniform across states and territories and that children are achieving equally or provided with the same opportunities throughout the states, that's difficult when each state has complete control over their schooling and doesn't have to agree to what the federal government says. They can take their funding and use it how they want to. Some of the blame has been attributed to teachers, both that they are not teaching the kids as individuals with the right content. They don't have the expertise in the subjects. We have a lot of teachers teaching out of field. For example, you have a maths teacher who has no background in maths and no formal teaching in a university context in maths or in science, or an English teacher, and they've been put in a science role, so they're not able to teach children properly because they don't have the knowledge themselves. There's also criticism that Australian school standards are too low, that assessment is inconsistent, and that the curriculum itself doesn't have enough challenging content. Also that fads have been adopted based on different educational theories that have been proposed and they've just been grabbed and implemented by state governments without really rigorous, robust and evidence-based theory of what helps children to learn and what will help them to learn efficiently, effectively and meet their learning interests and methods to help them absorb the content and perform in a way that helps them for whatever role they want to do later in life. There's also blame on cultural reasons as well, that Australia does not have a respect for education. When you see the high-performing countries, you have China and Singapore pretty much at the top of the list, followed by Macau, Hong Kong, and then Estonia, Canada. So that's for reading, and it's pretty much across the board. But a lot of those countries have an entrenched culture of respecting and prioritising education. Kids go to school for many more hours. There is an acceptance that kids will go home and they'll study for many more hours after school, which isn't really evident in Australia. It's up to individual kids and parents if they want to put extra effort in, but the mandatory homework in Australia is very minimal, and you can pretty much be finished on the way home from school with your homework and not have to put any extra work in. So that's another criticism that perhaps as a society we should be placing a greater importance on the effort and the time that kids spend on their schoolwork, and the importance of not necessarily the mark they get, not in a negative and judgmental way of criticising kids if they don't get a certain mark, but that they should put more effort and time and care into their work. So praising them for trying, not necessarily praising them for being smart or for getting an A. And then that leads also into a criticism of parenting, how as the performance of kids has been going down, parenting in Australia is becoming more flexible. There isn't the strict discipline and those kind of structures that was a norm in Australian life and Australian families a few decades ago, with religion and rules and a much more structured lifestyle with a more diligent application of principles. So now it's much more varied in between families and parenting styles. So people have also blamed loose parenting styles and flexibility in allowing children to choose what they want to do when they want to do it. And if they don't want to do their homework or focus on school, then that's fine with the parents. So we have all these parties apportioning blame to all these other stakeholders, but we're at the stage where these levels of performance are so shocking and they are continuously decreasing that we have to stop pointing fingers and really get to the heart of the problem and work out reform. It's not possible to blame any single person. This has been going for a number of governments, leaders, education ministers, state governments. There are so many people that have involved and have tried to fix it and improve performance, and it just hasn't worked at all. So obviously something new has to be tried. We've had Gonski reviews, we've had independent reviews, we've had Productivity Commission and other independent think tanks examine the issue and present recommendations, and some have been implemented and performance is still declining. So it seems this isn't a simple fix. This isn't increase the budget every year, increase the number of teachers per school. This is going to need a holistic approach, I think, of one, I think there's something to changing the culture of education in, I'm not sure if it's within Australia or widespread over more countries, but if you enjoyed schoolwork, well, certainly from my experience, from experience of people I know, if you enjoyed schoolwork, if you wanted to do more work or contribute more to class or to study beyond the curriculum, you were given a hard time by your classmates and it just wasn't offered by teachers if you wanted extra curriculum. So that attitude, I think, needs to change. It needs to be okay if kids want to do more. If kids want to perform well, they should be applauded for that, for trying and for giving it a go, for wanting to improve themselves and to learn more and to better themselves. They shouldn't be bullied for that. And teachers need to be prepared. If a kid wants to do extra work, not just to give them an extra sheet to fill in with their homework, but to really assess them and see how they can have them challenged. You can't just have one classroom that fits all, and if kids finish 100% of the sheet, that doesn't mean, oh, I've fulfilled my job for the day, I can leave it at that. Every kid should be challenged at all their different levels. So the next step from here that's happening is ministers will be meeting at the Council of Australian Governments, or COAG, meeting to discuss how they're going to reform to improve these results. And unfortunately, we've already had strong resistance from some parties like the Teachers Union, who are criticising or saying preemptively that there's nothing teachers can do, which I don't think is constructive. Again, there's no point in blaming anyone. Obviously, no one has the answer, and everyone wants the same thing here. This isn't political. Everyone wants kids to succeed. It helps everyone. It helps politicians. It helps teachers. It helps the unions if kids are doing better. So no one's trying to swindle anyone out of anything. And overworking teachers wouldn't really improve the scores anyway. So I think everyone needs to come to the table openly and be honest with what they can do and what they see from their perspective needs improvement, and then work from there to help these kids get the education they need and they deserve. Now, I wanted to go through the Medivac repeal bill, which was passed through the Senate today with a vote of 37 to 35. To refresh your memory, Labor and the Greens pushed for the Medivac bill prior to the May election, and the bill meant that detainees on Manus and Nauru could be brought to Australia if a doctor said they had an illness that needed medical attention. And once they're in Australia, they could not be sent back to detention. Another issue with this is the detainees left on those islands at the moment are the most difficult cases. The government has resolved the issues with a lot of previous detainees, but the ones left there are often the ones that came from countries like Iraq and Afghanistan, where they cannot be sent back to their country of origin, even if it's found they don't have a claim to asylum, because of the issues in those countries. Australia must keep them where they are. So if they are brought to Australia, they cannot be sent back to Manus and Nauru, and they cannot be sent back to their country of origin. So another one of the concerns was that if they committed a crime, if even severe ones such as murder, they could not be deported and had to remain in Australia. And we've seen vast numbers take up this Medivac option, with, until recently, 179 detainees have chosen to come to Australia, and out of that, only 19 have been hospitalised, and 19 found to have an illness that requires hospital attention. And just noting that also millions have been given to Manus and Nauru to supply their centres and their medical centres with enough material and aid to assist anyone that does have a medical illness whilst they're in place. And there are also fully equipped international hospitals in these locations. And then also we heard just recently the federal court handed down their judgment that under the Medivac legislation, no doctor actually had to see or interact with, even over Skype, for this person to be sent to Australia. So basically the doctor can sign something without ever having seen, spoken to, or interacted with the detainee in question. So the government's been trying to repeal this legislation for a while now, and the deciding vote has been Jackie Lambie, independent senator from Tasmania. So Jackie Lambie had expressed before that she would support the legislation to assist refugees. However, in a very tense Senate sitting today, we saw Jackie Lambie gave her explanation of her vote to side with the government. And she stated that although it was a difficult decision, this comes down to national security, and there is no need for this legislation in particular to help detainees. So even before this legislation, there is enough medical assistance on the islands in the locations. But then also, if Australian hospitals were required, that's completely budgeted for, and a panel interviews the person in question asking for assistance, or they hear about the person who needs further medical assistance that cannot be provided in the location. They are brought to Australia, they are given the full standard of care required, and then they are sent back to their location on Manus and Nauru. So Senator Lambie said she'd had full and frank discussions with the government, and she could not describe the exact information that managed to convince her because of course, national security grounds. This isn't public knowledge. And ministers have said before, a number of the people in question in detention, and also people who have come to Australia under Medivac law have committed a number of serious criminal offences, and because of the nature of migration law, some of them can't be deported, can't be detained, and they are in Australia, and they may be a threat to Australians, but because of the Medivac law, it makes it extremely difficult to detain them again, which is how Senator Lambie made her explanation, that she supports, of course, giving people the right medical attention, but that's not what this bill was about. This bill is about a backdoor way to get people out of detention and give them Australian citizenship or the ability to stay in Australia without being in detention. This then caused quite a stir in the Senate, with the Greens claiming that they will get to the bottom of a secret deal, they say, that Lambie has made with the government. Now, I'll say Senator Lambie said that she had discussions with the government in which information was revealed which allowed her to see the fuller truth and make a decision accordingly. And the government has denied there was a deal. So there's no evidence or suggestion that there was a deal as such, but Labor and the Greens are now branding it as a secret deal has been done, or Lambie has been bought off or something of the sort after this result. So now the repeal was successful. No further people will be allowed to use the Medivac legislation, but we've already had about 180 people claim it in just a few short months. So we will see what happens next with Labor and the Greens, whether they try to retort or propose further legislation to try to reverse the repeal and bring back Medivac. But with the sitting for the year closed in federal parliament, it's a big win for the government's agenda. On to the United Kingdom general election. It seems like I'm always talking about the UK, and there's always an election or a new Prime Minister or something to do with Brexit happening. Now, if you trust the polls, which I'm not sure that we do, accordingly, the Tories or Conservative Party should win about 359 seats, Labour 211, the Scott Nats 43 and Lib Dems 13. So they predict that Boris Johnson will retain power as Prime Minister. And one factor in that is Jeremy Corbyn, the Labour leader's massive unpopularity. Most recently, there was a lot of news and a lot of discontent about anti-Semitism within the British Labour Party. A leader in the Jewish community in the United Kingdom has come out condemning Jeremy Corbyn and his party's anti-Semitic comments and behaviours, which have been littered throughout the party's behaviour and comments made by Labour candidates over a number of years. And it's accepted that there's almost a culture of anti-Semitism within Labour by many people, especially by people in the Jewish community in Britain. And this was worsened by newsreaders asking Jeremy Corbyn if he would apologise for anti-Semitism that has come out of his party. And four times he refused to answer and apologise for the harm caused to individuals by these incidents. And just today he has apologised loosely, saying that there are anti-Semitic elements out of all parties and it has no place in his party. So that has largely failed to quell the concern and the worry and the anger that people have that a major political party in 2019 could exhibit quite a few anti-Semitic behaviours. The leaders just had a televised leaders debate, and out of the audience, they largely failed to sway anyone that was going to vote either Conservative or Labour before they heard the leaders talk. But we did have a reflection of kind of the main lines that each of the leaders have been canvassing with. Boris Johnson saying that his party will get Brexit done finally, stop the delay, stop the dithering, get it done so people can move on with their lives. Meanwhile, there was Jeremy Corbyn of Labour taking a bit of a Bernie Sanders approach, saying that people have to pay less for things and Labour would subsidise a lot of things without really backing up where he was going to get that money from. Another one of his proposals was a four-day working week. Now, as lovely as that sounds, I'm sure everyone, there's no justification of how that was going to be paid for. and there was not a good reception to this proposal, because without a government or a structure backing up how that fifth day was going to be paid for, you can only assume that people would be paid 4 days' pay for 4 days' work, which is not a popular proposal. So it looks like Boris Johnson will retain that power, largely due to Jeremy Corbyn's apparent ineptitude in gaining the popularity and succeeding as a confident leader with some good policies behind him. So it will be good, hopefully, if we see Brexit being resolved soon. It has been going on for far too long, and it has become such a divisive part of society in Britain. It would be good to see it resolved in a way that doesn't disrupt the lives and employment of Brits and Europeans, but instead perhaps there can be some opportunities salvaged and presented to any countries that would like to trade or engage in any other business or immigration with Britain. Thank you very much for listening. I always appreciate your time. It's been great talking about some of the important issues in Australia and Britain today. Please let me know if there's anything you'd like me to speak about in the future, if you have any comments or questions. Find me on Instagram at Tell Me More Podcast. So just send me a message or comment on the post, and hopefully I'll be able to cover one of the topics you've been interested about next time. Bye!